church that was looking for a pastor, a church where I was friends with everybody on the search committee, a church where I had been to these people's houses, gone out to eat with them, help them pack up and move when they moved houses. Week after week, I sat in the congregation and listened to weak, meaningless sermons. Now, the pastor had left. The pastor left about 2 weeks after we started the church. And the sermons were, they would have, some of the guys in the church would come up to preach the sermon. And they would have, like, all the senior high youth members, they would have to sit. I remember we sat here, where you guys are, you're facing this way, and all the senior high kids would have to sit up front over here. And I'd sit there with Barb and Caitlin and some of our friends in church and just watch these kids for an hour, hour and a half, and they'd just be like, for an hour and a half. And I'd watch the people in the church, and they'd be looking at the clock on the wall and looking at their watches and wondering, when is this ever going to end? Which I know some of you guys probably feel that here too. It's okay. A church of nearly 200 people, when we started, within just a few months, was down to a little over 100. And I kept saying, God, I know you've called me to preach. Let me preach here. And God said, no. Every week. And every week I'd sit there and I'd say, God, just give me one chance. Let me preach. Let me show these guys that you've called me to preach. And God said, no. I was confused, lost. I felt like a loser for not bringing in finances for my family. See, I knew God had called me to preach, and I knew that this church, my church, needed a pastor. And every week I would say, God, maybe next week they'll call and ask me to preach. And every week God said, no. Sometimes God simply says no for reasons we don't understand. It's interesting that Brenda picked these up. Did you guys look at this? Written in secret, a life known by God. And that's the whole sermon right there. That's the whole sermon. Sometimes God says no because he knows that what we want him to say yes to will hurt us. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. Here's the thing. When God says no, we want to know why. But God doesn't owe us an explanation. See, we like to think that we're special and that God should bow down to us and give us a reason for everything he does, but God doesn't owe us that. God's God. He can do whatever he wants, and that's hard to accept sometimes. Well, why not, God? God, I prayed and prayed and prayed, and the very thing I prayed not to happen is what happened. How about if you give me an explanation for that, God? God doesn't owe us an explanation. And that's the hardest part when God says no. Why does God say no to things that to our human reasoning would be the very things that we think God should say yes to? God, let the child live. No. God, take away this thorn in my flesh. No. Father, take this cup away from me. No. Here's a difficult thing when God says no. Irrational thought and irrational reasoning enters into our heads. Unless that's not a put down, that's the way we're programmed as humans. We start to think things like, oh, God must be mad at me for something. I must have done something wrong this time. I've really blown it now. God must really hate me. That's the way we think. It's always been that way. Job chapter 7, verse 20. Job talking. Have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target so that I am a burden to myself? Here's Job. Job's going through all this stuff. And he's saying, what have I done, God? Why are you making me go through all this stuff? What have I done to you, God? How about if you give me an explanation here? This is Job talking. Now listen, here's an important thing. little side trip here. See what this says? I am a burden to myself. There's only two versions, the New American Standard and the King James, that get that right. Every other version gets it wrong. One little word changes the whole book of Job. One little word. Okay? This is important. This is one of 18 verses the Hebrew scholars point out, and they say when you translated it, you really blew it. This is one of them. Same verse, different version. We're going to use the NIV. If I have sinned, what have I done to you? So far, so good. You who see everything we do, so far, so good. Why have you made me your target? So far, so good. Have I become a burden to you? You see what Job did? You see what that version does? It takes the responsibility away from Job and shifts the responsibility to God. This is your fault, God. You're the one that could do something about this, and you've really blown it, God. See, the correct translation is, have I become a burden to myself? When you say, have I become a burden to myself, Job is saying, because of my sin, it weighs down upon me, and I'm a burden even to myself, God. See, this version shifts the blame to God. But the correct version knows where the problem lies. It doesn't lie with God. It lies with us. And this has everything to do with our topic and our reaction to God and saying no. Job says, if I have sinned, then tell me what I've done, God. See, in this verse, he wants to put God on trial. You tell me what the problem is here, God, because I don't know. So it must be on your end. And that's what we think when God says no to us. It has to be something I've done. Because of all the calamities falling on Job, and God saying no, when Job asks God, why are you doing all this? Take this away from me, God. And they're having this conversation back and forth, and God says no. And he can't understand why. And just a couple of verses before this verse, Job says, listen, God, if you're not going to take all this suffering away, then I'd just as soon be dead. Just kill me and leave my presence. I don't want anything to do with you. Job 7:16, a couple verses before this, still Job talking, I hate my life, and I don't want to go on living. Oh, leave me alone. He's talking to God. Leave me alone, God. Let me just die in peace here. It's easy to do, and we all do it. It's easy to get mad at God when God says no. It's easy to get angry with him. God, please let me pastor this church. No. Please let us get back together, God. I promise I'll change. No. God, please let me get this person as my boss and not that person. No. So how do we handle no? 2 Samuel 12:15, New American Standard. So Nathan, prophet, went to his house. Nathan has talked to David and told David, look, God knows what you've done. God knows you've committed adultery. He knows you've sinned against him. David says, I've sinned against God. Nathan says, God forgave you. And Nathan goes away. And then look, then the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, so that he was very sick. Now here's another thing. Note this wasn't any accident. We don't like to see this part of God. We want to fit God into a box. This is what a God should be like. And so we're going to put him in this little box. And if he steps outside of those boundaries, then the problem has to be on his end. Because there's no way it could be on our end. Okay, but look what happened here. This verse clearly states who caused the child to get sick. Who brought the sickness on the child? God did. God had a reasoning for this. Listen, God puts this stuff in the Bible so that we can see that all throughout eternity, human history, 6,000 years, okay? I don't care what your science teachers tell you. You can only trace human history back about 6,000 years, a little bit less than 6,000 years. So for 6,000 years, God wants us to see that everyone had the same problems. Everyone was in the same mess as us. Everybody has had calamities. He wants us to see that everybody's life is just as messed up as our lives are. Everybody's. But the child was innocent of the crime, God. What did the child do? 2 Samuel 12:16. David begged God to spare the child. He's begging, he's pleading with tears. He went without food and lay all night on the bare ground. This went on for a week. The elders of his household, his servants, pleaded with him to get up and eat with them, but he refused. David is fasting and praying and crying and pouring out his heart to God. He's innocent, Lord. He hasn't done anything. I'm the one who sinned. Please let the child live. It's not his fault, God. Take it out on me. No. And the child dies. 2 Corinthians 12:7, English Standard Version. Paul talking. You guys should remember a lot of this from last week. So to keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, God's pouring all this stuff into Paul, teaching him all these lessons about himself, revealing himself to him. So to keep me from getting conceited, a thorn was given to me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. Now, today's lesson's not about that. We went back and forth with that last week. But note here for the second time, where does the suffering come from? It comes from God. God had a reason for this. 2 Corinthians 12:8. Three times I pleaded with the Lord, take this away from me. And three times God said no. I can't tell you how many conversations I have with people and they're going through things and they can't understand why God would allow them to go through the things they're going through. After all, we're Christians. We've accepted Christ's blood. Shouldn't we get special treatment from God? I mean, of the billions and billions of people in the world, we're among the select few who actually have chosen God. So shouldn't that count for something? Shouldn't we get special treatment from God because we're Christians? Listen, we will get special treatment from God when we spend eternity in heaven. But for the here and now, the Bible says God causes it to rain on good and the evil. Treats everybody the same. We don't deserve special privileges. We think we do, but we don't. We don't deserve to go through life without health problems and without financial problems and without struggles with our children. And we don't, what makes us think that just because we're Christians that we should not have to suffer any of those things? See, that's human reasoning, but that's not God's reasoning. Pastor David Jeremiah, we can find ourselves in the middle of God's perfect will and in the middle of a perfect storm at the same time. This is a painting by Rembrandt. This is Jesus down here. And he's sound asleep in the middle of the storm and they're waking him up. Listen, they're in the middle of a perfect storm and in the middle of God's will for their life at the exact same instant. And sometimes we find ourselves in that same place, guys. We don't like it. I know that doesn't make sense when we're going through things, when we're suffering, when we're hurting, when we're confused, when we're frustrated. It doesn't make sense. We struggle when God says no. Pastor Mark Driscoll, Pastor Driscoll started a big church out in California. He's a no-nonsense pastor. His church didn't like it. He built his church up into 10,000 people, and then they got rid of him. But he said this, our identity is not in our joy, and our identity is not in our suffering. Our identity is in Christ. whether we have joy or whether we're suffering? How do we respond when God says no? Matthew 26:39. He went a little further and bowed his face to the ground. We're talking about Jesus. Praying, "My Father," he's in agony and torment. And we've gone over this. It's not the picture where Jesus is leaning on the rock with this moonbeam shining down on him. He's in agony. And he's pleading, "God, please, I don't want to do this. There has to be another way. God, please take this away from me." No. Mark 14:36. "Abba," Father. Abba means daddy. "Daddy, please find another way. Take this away from me." No. Luke 22:42, English Standard Version. "Father, if you're willing, take this cup away from me." No. What makes us think we're more special than God's own son? "But I'm a Christian, God. Why do I have to endure this? Why won't you just give me what I want, God?" Let me ask you something. If you know what God has in store for you 1 year from now, raise your hand. If you know what God has in store for you 1 month from now, raise your hand. If you know what God has in store for you next week at this time, raise your hand. If you know what God's going to do with your life tomorrow, raise your hand. Here's the entire sermon cropped down to one simple statement. And think really hard about this. If you think that your plans for your life and your plans for your future and your plans for your eternity are better than God's, raise your hand. Anybody want to put themselves in control instead of God? Anybody? Maybe that's the point, guys. We don't know what tomorrow holds, or next week, or next year, but God does. See, we trust Jesus with our eternity. We trust Jesus with our salvation, but we don't trust him when things go wrong here and now. We don't want God to fix things now. We want the problem to be taken care of now. We want the uncertainty to be gone now. We want God's answer to be yes. But we don't know what tomorrow holds for us. God does. Even when God says no, it's not because he hates you. It's not because he's mad at you. So why does he say no when we so desperately want something? Sometimes it's because we have unconfessed sin in our life. God's not going to honor us and work with us and glorify us and lift us up if we have unconfessed sin in our life. He's not going to do it, ever. So step number one, make sure you don't have any unconfessed sin in your life. And then listen, here's step number two. When you do confess your sin, leave it with God, forget about it, and go on with your life. Quit dragging it around. Sometimes it's because he knows the harm that will come to us later on if he says yes to our request today. Sometimes it's to help us grow. Sometimes it's to help us develop our faith. But still, what is the proper response when God says no? Is the child dead? David asks the servants. Yes, they told him. You stink, God. How could you do this? I've wasted a whole week of my life praying to you, not eating. I could have been out having banquets and having a good time. All this Christianity stuff is just one big lie. Is that how David responded? Is that how we respond? Listen, when we don't get what we want in our lives, do we drag that around with us? Do we get angry with God? Do we hold a grudge against God? For days, for weeks, for years? I worked with a guy at a gym I managed down in Pickerington. His dad had died years earlier, and he still was mad at God every single day of his life. He woke up mad at God. We all pass on, everybody. But he was mad at God. Do you carry a grudge against God? Let me ask you something in all seriousness. Do you think that hurts God's feelings? Who does that hurt if you walk around with a grudge against God? It doesn't hurt God. First, he already knew you were going to do it. He already knows when you're going to get over it. Okay, it doesn't hurt God. Look at how David did respond. 2 Samuel 12:20. Is the child dead? Yes, David, he's dead. Next verse. Then David arose from the earth and washed and anointed himself and changed his clothes. And he went into the house of the Lord and worshipped. He then went to his own house. And when he asked, they set food before him and he ate. Now listen, did David mope around? Did David accuse God of being unfair? Did David curse God? Nope, look at the order. Look at the order. Here's David, he's a mess. He's been crying and he hasn't eaten and he hasn't showered and he's a mess for a whole week. So the first thing he does, yep, your child's dead, David. First thing he does, gets up and makes himself presentable, cleans himself up to go into the house of the Lord. Second thing he does, goes into the tabernacle and worships the living God for who he is. And then, and only then, remember he's really hungry, he hasn't eaten in a week, then he goes home and gets something to eat. David, you wonder why, with all his sin and with all his blunders and all his downfalls and all his mistakes, you know why David was called a man after God's own heart? Because no matter what David did, no matter how many times he fell, no matter how much he sinned, no matter how far away he got from the truth, he always trusted God. Always. He always knew that God was on his side and that God had his best interest at heart. Always. Even when the child died. You remember the rest of the story? God raised David up to become the greatest king in Israeli history. He united the kingdoms, Judah and Israel. He brought the Jewish people back together. He raised David to be a king known all over the world. So what does this entire episode with David and the child show? Here's David. He spends a week pleading and begging God for the life of this innocent child. Fasting. Pastor David Guzik says it like this. Extraordinary prayer and extraordinary fasting are not tools to get what we want from God. They are demonstrations of our radical submission and surrender to God's power and will. Listen, we don't pray and fast and do these things to get God to change his mind. He's not going to change his mind. It's not why we do those things. Okay? It shows that come what may, David knew and trusted that the God that he claimed was fair and just and loving and had his best interest at heart. David knew that. Even when God said no. 3 times I begged God. I pleaded with God, please take this thorn away from me, God. I can't stand this. No. What kind of God are you anyway? You're just going to sit back and do nothing when we both know that you could take care of this problem if you want to. What kind of God am I walking around serving here anyway? We're friends like you, God, who needs enemies. Is that how Paul responded? Let's see how Paul responded. 2 Corinthians 12:9, New Living Translation. I like how this version states it. So now I am glad to boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ can work through me. This one, Columbine happened. There were the reporters and the police showed up, and there were two sets of parents. There was a set of parents over here, and they were quietly talking. And there were parents over here that were hysterical and crying and wailing. And the police and the reporters wanted to know the difference. These people over here were Christians. This is a true story. And they knew that their kids were Christians. These people over here were not Christians. They knew they're not going to see their kids again. See, the thing is, they both went through the exact same thing. But in their weakness, they demonstrated the strength of God to these people over here. Sometimes God has us go through things because he wants other people to see the Christ that lives in you. Did Paul mope around? Did he accuse God of being unfair? Did he curse God? No, Paul. Okay, God, I trust you. If this is the way you want it, then let's get on with it. Let Jesus shine through me. Let's go out there and win the world for Christ. You and me, God. Daddy, can you take this cup away from me? No, son. Well, what kind of God are you? What kind of dad are you? We both know you could come up with another way here. Is that how Jesus responded? Matthew 26, 39. Yet not as I will, but as you will. Mark 14, 36. Yet not what I will, but what you will. Luke 22, 42. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. What if, let's assume for just a second, we're almost done. Let's assume for just a second that God said, yes, son, I agree with you. This suffering is just too much. These people aren't worth it anyway. They all hate us. What if he would have said yes to Jesus? This would be the only future available to you. If God would have said yes to Jesus, this was our future, the only one we had. Because the only way we could get right with God is because God the Father said no to Jesus when Jesus asked him to take that cup away from him. The cup, by the way, was our sin. It wasn't the beating, it wasn't the cross, it wasn't the torture. It was the sin, our sin. Jesus didn't want that. He didn't want our sin. But God said, nope, there's only one way. That was us. If God said yes to Jesus. But God said no. How happy are you that God says no sometimes now? Thanks, Deb. Driving on the interstate one day. Driving down the road. Come across a horrific accident. 6 or 7 members of a family were crammed into a car. A driver fell asleep, killed them all. Except the driver. Stuck in this long line of traffic, and the driver is laying there and his head split wide open. And I watched this woman get out of her car. And I watched her go over and with her own hands hold this guy's head together. He would have died in seconds. I watched her hold this guy's head together until the paramedics arrived and saved this guy's life. That woman's the most amazing person I know, my wife Barb. And listen, I've seen God say no to Barb 12 times. No to things that she desperately wanted. I've seen the hurt in her eyes. I've seen the frustration. I've walked with her through the pain. I've seen the sorrow and the disappointment and the confusion. But never once, not once, have I ever seen Barb question God, turn from God, curse God, ask God why. Every single disappointment in her life, and I've walked with her through a lot of times when God said no, but every single one of those things, you know what her response to me was? Well, it just means God has something better for me. Every time. And he's never disappointed. And that's the thing. When God says no to you, it's not because he hates you, not because he's mad at you. It's because he loves you more than you can ever imagine. He loves you. Listen, he loves you. He knows what will happen to you from this moment until all eternity. And what he wants is what is best for you. And sometimes what is best for you is for God to say no. God has a reason for saying no. Listen, always. And it is always for your good. Always. It is always for something better in your life. Always. And it's to glorify himself through you. I was frustrated with God and with church, with everything. Week after week, I sat in our former church, a church that was looking for a pastor, a church where I was friends with everybody on the search committee, gone to their houses, helped them move. Just give me one chance, God. And they'll see, no. One day I get a text. It's from Dorothy Warren's granddaughter. She said her church in a little town called Alexandria, which I never heard of, was looking for a pastor. I sent them a resume and they responded. I'm in a room, this room out here, and I'm sitting at the head of the table, and Mike Croak's sitting here, he's wearing a Ohio State hat, and John Green's here, and Susie's at the end of the table on the right here, and poor Susie. Susie, thank you so much. You guys don't know this, but after you guys hired me, for months, I pestered poor Susie. I'd call her at work. I'd send her texts at home. Susie, what do I do with this? Susie, how do I handle this? For months that went on. I pestered her for weeks and months. But here's the thing. You guys hired me. You took a chance on a nobody that nobody had ever heard of. You accepted me and welcomed me and gave me a chance. You became my friends, my family. You guys are the world to me. Listen, I would take a bullet for anybody in this room, literally. Okay, maybe not a real bullet, because that could kill me. And maybe not those, you know, those rubber bullets they fire sometimes? Probably not one of those, because they would leave a mark and they would probably hurt. But you know those Nerf guns they have? I would definitely step in front of one of those things for you guys. God said no, Brian, because God had a better plan. God had a yes plan for me. A better yes. The best yes. You guys here in this room are beyond my greatest dreams of what a church should be. When God says no, just be patient. Because I promise you, your yes is coming. And when it does, it will be better than the best yes you can ever imagine. I love you guys.